Had a meeting in the morning. Experience has demonstrated that, in fact, by the time they release that list, it's almost challengeable, given the fact that there might have been changes before the publication, and those changes are difficult to be effected once the publication has been done. And that, therefore, we should seek to remove the publication to the Government Gazette, but also the stipulation that says at least once a year, and make it possible for the department to maintain such a list in the website of the department, and it be updated frequently. And that the impact of those changes will then mean that the department will have saved on the printing cost of the Government Gazette, and that an amount of at least 100,000 will have been saved if we remove that requirement, because the IT based list will not require such a printing situation. Those were basically the core of the amendments that were asked to deal with. Or rather, let me say the other area dealt with the issuance of a certificate by the Director General in a case where the determination of the individual comes to the fore as to whether the individual is entitled to diplomatic immunities and privileges or not, and that such a certificate will constitute what lawyers call a prima facie evidence to that effect. We have engaged with this particular act. Unless there are other issues that members want to raise, I want us to proceed with dealing with each section of the act.
I just recall that the state law advisors were going to research something, and particularly in regard to the status of the Director General certificate, and they were going to report back to us. I would just like to inquire whether they're ready to do so. Perhaps before we go into the detail, just on the matter issue of the issues that were raised yesterday.
Are you ready to share with us what you might have found out?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, it will by and large depend on what the committee decides. As the bill is at the moment, it was certified and is an LVA constitution, but we looked at it, and if the feeling is that Three of the Act, Section 90, should stay as it is, and in order for the certificate of the Director General only to be used in proceedings in a court of law, then we need to, that would be fine, but then we need to look at 9.2, and it might be amended to read something like this, that the minister must cause a complete list of all persons on the register to be published on the internet, and must cause the list to be updated regularly, and then just to say for the purpose of this section, internet means the international computer network known by that name. I don't know whether my colleague has anything else to
add. Thank you, sir. Not much, because that's discussed yesterday, and clearly it looks like the concern is that the certificate will be used when any question arises, not only when a question arises relating to court proceedings. expect that that might result in people being discouraged from pursuing the matter further to go forward to court. So if that is the feeling, Substation 2 will have to revert to the old provision in that act and retain it as it was in the old act. And just as Fidjian suggested, that 2A be slightly amended to accommodate the fact that the department wants the list to be updated on the internet as opposed to being published in the Gazette.
List of all persons on the register to be published on the internet and must cause the list to be updated regularly on the OS. It can be on the website also. I must just point out that in terms of that in the Act itself, Section 9.1 creates an obligation on us to keep a register in which there must be registered the names of all persons who enjoy A, immunity from civil and criminal jurisdiction in the course of the Republic, or the immunities and privileges in accordance with the conventions or in terms of any agreement contemplated Section 7. The conventions are made law in terms of the principle act now currently. So two would then slot in that the list of names in the register must then be published on the website what's decided.
There was consensus on that yesterday.
I'm a court chair. I mean, I don't want to belabor this, and maybe seeing it's very specific to a particular section of the Act, we should go through it as you suggested and get to a proper discussion of that when we get to that section then, because it seems that they're proposing an amendment. And what I understood them to say yesterday is that they would go and look at the, was it the Patents Act, Trademarks Act, and see how they dealt with it and whether it was desirable to have a certificate for any purpose or whether it was only desirable to have it for a court process. That's what I understood. And they were going to come back and say which was more desirable or whether one practice or another wasn't desirable. I still don't quite follow which is the preferred course. But I think if they're going to suggest an amendment, we should actually get it in writing separately before we consider that thing. Anyway, but perhaps we should just wait to get there when we consider that.
Okay. Let's deal with number one. Number 116. Basically, the depletion of members of the committee, the composition of members of the committee, and of course, there's ways in both titles to reflect indicate omissions from the existing act, and ways underlined with the service line indicate insertion of the act. So there are omissions and there are insertions. We have problems with that. The first one is members of the family needs, one is spousal, and when we discussed yesterday, we indicated that the spousal definition could be a definition as indicated by the family state, and rather than us trying to determine who the spouse and who the spouse is. That, and also that we will run through the whole definition of what the service state states to up is the family of the diploma. That they will, my understanding that the service state will send a communication indicating who are the members of that diploma's family. And if there are changes in that diploma's family, they will then have an obligation to indicate to us that these are the following changes. And without us having to go and verify and do research as to how the individual is related to the diploma. That the principle that will be operational will be the dependency of that family member to the diplomat, and therefore that should be sufficient for us to establish that linkage. That is my understanding. So if, yes, Chair.
Just on the issue of spouse, I have a question. Is spouse defined some, you know, an act which, I mean, we don't have before us? Because if it isn't, then I think we were suggesting that there could be a question of spouses. So maybe we should say spouse or spouses.
Chair, in terms of the interpretation, I can go into this plural. Otherwise, so these spouse will include spouse was part of the plural.
The singular include the plural. So do we have problem in that particular paragraph? We don't. Then the second aspect is number two. Section 9, the section 9 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the subsection by substituting for subsections 2 and 3 of the following subsections, respectively. The minister must cause a complete list of all persons on the register to be published at least once a year in the Gazette and then made publicly available. So basically, we are saying that we should remove published at least once a year in the Government Gazette. The amendment that we're dealing with here, we're saying that if you look at the memorandum, it removes the obligation on the minister to publish the list. So we're saying that it should, that's the amendment that they were proposing, that the minister must cause a complete list of all persons on the register to be published on the website of the Department of Foreign Affairs, to be published or made publicly available on the website of the Department of Foreign Affairs, so that it makes it obligatory to do that publication. It's not left to a gentleman agreement, that is obligatory to publish that list. But then you're saying that there must be an insertion, if members agree, that says it must be kept up to date. It must be updated as frequently as possible so that it can be forever up to date. So that it's an obligation to publish it, but also an obligation to keep it up to date. And that those two be prescribed by the law, so that somebody should not say we're going to do it a year after, while there might have been 20 changes in between. I don't know what members say about that.
Agree.
We agree.
Okay.
So
they are doing it
updated regularly.
They are writing it the updated version. So the third aspect on that section is, if in any proceedings in a court of law any question arises as to whether or not any person enjoys any immunity or privilege under this act or the convention, a certificate under the hand or issued under the authority of the Director General stating any fact relating to that question is prima facie evidence of that fact. So they are saying that we should delete in any proceeding in a court of law and say if any question arises as to whether or not any person enjoys any immunity or privileges under this act or the convention, a certificate under the hand of or issued under the authority of the Director General stating any fact relating to that question is a prima facie evidence of that fact. That's the area that we said they must look at that we're going to work on. And my understanding when you came back to me was that in the Trade Act it says that when registration has been done, just put it the way you've said it.
I have this provision in front of me. It says that a certificate purporting, or well, the first section says that any register kept under this Act shall be prima facie evidence of any matter directed or authorized by this Act to be inserted in that register. And then the following section says, a certificate purporting to be under the hand of the registrar as to the entry, matter or thing which he is authorized by this Act to make or do shall be prima facie evidence of the entry having been made and of the contents thereof and of the matter or thing having been done or left undone. In my discussion with Gideon, we had to look at the use of the word prima facie, and the real issue was, when do you use that requirement of prima facie evidence? In my opinion, in legal proceedings, when you decide whether a person has a case or not. So that's why I would argue to retain Section 3. I don't know.
Because we can
arise on the
situation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't understand that conclusion, because why the matter can arise in any other occasion. The issue of immunity can arise at any other occasion. I think there are quite a number of occasions the matter can arise. Why do you want to narrow it to the court? In any case, on its own, that certificate is in fact a prima facie evidence of that fact, and why should we narrow to the court? I don't understand.
Sheila?
I can see the argument about the state Lord Bander, and it just worried me. That's why I raised it, a number of us raised it. There seems to be a disjuncture between the list, the authority of the list, and the authority of the certificate. And if there is precedent for bringing them together in the way that has been dealt with in the Trademark Act, perhaps we should sort of follow that precedent.
Before you respond, the reason why we are trying to raise the two, we are saying that when you raise, probably Section 3 would be fine in any proceeding in the court of law, but then you have to have something preceding, because you have to make the list maintaining the website as legal as possible, or as authentic as possible. Because the way it will be now, it will mean that what you retain at your website, it's not substantively an issue that you could then deal with should there be a dispute. So you need to link the two. And my argument has always been that the list maintained at the website, the certificate will be a confirmation of that list. So therefore you need to create a situation where the list that is maintained in itself, outside the physical issuance of the certificate, could serve as the legal document, as the legal document that somebody could then be able to go to, and then as further evidence in court, you can then issue a certificate. But your first port is to go to the internet. Oh no, the name is not there. Then there's a dispute arising, because I did not see it on the list. So I do not believe that you are immune. Then the Director General then issues the certificate. That could have been in between the time when the list was updated or not updated. It might have fallen within that crack. So then the certificate becomes your what you call a prima facie document that will then go to court. But the list must have some authority, that when I go to the list, I must know that this list is as authentic as any certificate that I can get from the Director General. But if I want confirmation, I can then go to the Director General and say, I've seen this name on the list, but can I get something else? Then the Director General will then issue a certificate in line with that. But the list can't just be left with no authority. That's what we're trying to argue. And I'm not sure whether we are making sense.
For the chair, three is dependent on two. And when two, and since we have agreed on two, website, etc., but says in three, if
If, let's say, any question arises, and in any proceedings of a court of law is neither here nor there at this stage, but he said, if any question arises, then the following procedure applies, whether the Director General or under his authority, they are not mutually exclusive, actually three enhances two and makes two relevant to the person when there is a dispute. If there is a dispute or if in any circumstances such a dispute arises, notwithstanding the publication on the website, then the authority of the Director General and or his nominee applies. They'll issue a certificate. So they're not mutually exclusive, actually they enrich each other.
Thank you, Kim. We would just like to understand how the amendment would work in practice, and maybe just to explain 9.2 at the moment, where it has to be published at least once a year in the Gazette. We have always read that, we as the Department of Foreign Affairs, as this was for information purposes. So the Gazette publication itself didn't have any legal status, and what we're trying to do at the time was we decided that we wouldn't amend the Act too much because generally it's working quite well, so we're just trying to tweak it a little bit. So this is one of those tweaking areas here, and initially we thought, well, you can't do away with the Gazette publication, and then we spoke through it and we said, well, actually the Gazette publication is for information purposes, and so let's try and make the information purposes more effective, but it still wouldn't change the legal status of it. And then that's why we went then into 3 and we deleted that in any proceedings in a court of law. Of course, you know, we're now in the legislative process, so we abide by that. I would just like to then clarify, because if you give the list in the Gazette some sort of status, a prima facie status, then you also have the certificate as a prima facie status. There's no real hierarchy. And so it, just in terms of implementing that, I'm not sure how we would do that, because then someone can go to the internet and say, okay, now we know the status, but they don't actually have any confirmation from Foreign Affairs. And then they come back to us a second time. So we would just like to clarify that sort of hierarchy of the confirmation. Thank you.
If I understand you correctly, the honourable gentleman sitting over there, his question that any other questions might arise, non-legal questions, right? If I understand you correctly, you want the list to address those other questions that might arise, not necessarily legal questions. The first step. Then if it turns into a legal matter, or it is purely a legal matter, the certificate is used as prima facie evidence of the fact that the person is indeed on the list.
That's what
they're
trying to argue.
Yeah.
That's the hierarchy that we're trying to argue. Mm. That your first step is your list, but the list should be such that it has some weight. Mm. It should not be just a list
by itself,
it should have some standing, some respectability, that if I consult it, and for whatever reason, it should be sufficient to give me the information I want. But in an event that I decide that not, I have the information, I now know the status of this person, but I'm still proceeding, then the certificate is then required. To then say, okay, fine, the court must now determine the status of this individual. I have the information that this individual has certain privileges, has certain immunities, that's what I know. However, I believe that I still have a matter to pursue. Now, the Director General must then give a certificate to authenticate that it's factual that this individual has those immunities, and that's the evidence that the court will then have to test and say, this is what the web says, but this is what the Director General says. Let's say let's put a hypothetical situation. In between times before the website has been updated, my immunities don't exist. And I go to the web, it says that I've got immunities. But there's not any other source of verifying that. And if I go to court, I need the director general to say what I have is authentic. And the certificate then serves as that evidence. I need to go to court and say, this individual does not have immunities despite the fact that the website was not updated on Tuesday but was updated on Wednesday. But the certificate by the director general supersedes that particular situation. But I don't have to start by requesting the certificate, because it means that if you've got 20 disputes, the director general will spend the whole week writing the certificates. But I could do my own work with the web, and if I'm satisfied with that, that it ends there. But if it proceeds to court, then the requirement of that certificate kicks in as an additional proof of what I know or I don't know is factual. That's the hierarchy we're trying to develop. But of course, you might have to fashion it. We are arguing it as parliamentarians, might have to fashion it in such a way that it makes legal sense.
I agree with what you said. I think the fact that the list, in terms of the act now, will be published, that is the legal status. That can't be made prima facie, because it changes all the time. So that is why 3 kicks in, and I think that's why we need to take out in any proceedings in the court of law, because that presupposes that the proceedings must already have started. So you would need that before. Because in terms of this principal act, you'd be in trouble if you willfully and without exercise of reasonable care issues, obtains or executes any legal proceeds against a person who enjoys immunity under this act, section 15. So you would need that certificate of the director general before you go to court. Otherwise, it would be too late, I think. But that's one of the aspects. There's more to this than that. So I agree that the list can be published and kept regularly updated. For general information, so that can be your first port of call. But if you then intend to go to court, that you can go to the DG before, not in any proceedings in the court of law, then it's that would be too late. So.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's precisely my point. The prima facie nature of the certificate need not be linked to court proceedings only, because that's what we want to prevent. So any dispute may arise, we want the certificate to be prima facie proof of the facts that it purports to indicate, not necessarily before the court, because we want to prevent that. Only when people insist that the certificate is worthless, then the matter goes to court and it is discussed there. But we want a situation, if a person is arrested by police and claims these privileges and the issue of internet and so on is neither here nor there at that moment. And you see, and then there are those complications. You want to have the certificate to help you in that situation. You don't want to go to court. That's what we want to prevent. So the point he's making, he just made, that's what I was speaking to. So when it's not linked the prima facie nature of the certificate only to court proceedings, but to any dispute.
If any question arises, and what is in brackets, then you delete it and it cannot be here or there.
So what is saying is correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I think that taking the argument so far, it does appear that it would be in fact appropriate to not link the certificate to a case already in court, you know, going to court. And I think the state lawyer there, just a minute or so ago, he did put that in that direction. So I'm just trying to say that are we satisfied with that or not?
Just a fact of a point, I'm in agreement with the two colleagues. I mean, the DG yesterday made the point, most of the issues is really commercial issues, lease contracts, whatever, and those matters, in some cases, go to court anyway, it will assist the department in terms of the admin. So I'm in agreement with this issue.
Yeah.
I would like to move that we accept it.
Yes.
Do we agree?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yes, thank you.
Let's agree. There's something that does not make perfect sense in my head, but I will agree because. The state law advisor says that by agreeing to legally publish it, it should have some element of standing. That's what you're saying. If we go back to two, you're saying that if we say that, if we insist that it should be legally binding for the minister to publish and update the list, that should be legally sufficient. Just on that aspect.
Yes, Chair, because there's now an obligation on the minister to publish that list on the website. So that gives it its legality. But to make that prima facie, then three would fall away, really. What purpose would three then serve? But the problem is that the internet is done manually and it's not. And it also only reflects the current situation. Mm. But if you want to know about something last year, that is what's. Why it, I think it should be for information, but if you want to make sure, and then you get the certificate from the DG.
Mm.
That is all I understand.
Okay.
Mm.
Can I just ask, is two going to be reworded to reflect the obligation to publish on an internet site that as will be the case?
Yes.
So we'll get the revised wording.
That's my understanding. That it will inserted the obligatory part. That's what I want you to understand. That if we don't make the internet website obligatory, it's neither here nor there. So if we make it obligatory, it then has
legal weight.
A substance.
It has legal weight. Yeah.
Because that's what I wanted to run away from. That it should not be a list that is neither here nor there. It should be something that somebody can, as a first step, depend on. And then otherwise, if anything else, you can then have other elements that you can have recourse on. But something that somebody, that has some respect, so that whoever does the inputting takes care of what gets inputted in there. So that's basically what we're trying to argue for, that it must have some level. It can't just be a list.
Publicly
available
is very
vague. It could
be sort of bundles of papers.
So
that,
no.
We're putting an obligation on the minister here.
Yeah, we're saying that the minister must cost a complete list of all persons on the register to be published in the website of the Department of Foreign Affairs and made publicly available.
Yeah.
And the updated part?
Yes, to be updated as frequently as possible. That's another, to be updated as quick, so it can be up to scratch. Just wrong of it.
This is an enabling act which delegates the responsibility, in this case, to the Director General and or his nominee to do X, Y, Z. I think we should clarify that in our minds. This act enables the Director General to facilitate a process where, in the event of a dispute or whatever, a certificate is issued, etc., etc., So we have got to get it clear in our heads that this act itself is a facility. Well, in law you guys call it the Enabling Act to delegate responsibility. I don't think they are contradictory. I think that it is a facility that makes governance easier.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to indicate that with the provision of 9.2, is that that is actually what we had always intended in terms of, yes, we're going to make it available on the internet and update regularly. So if the Parliament would like to make that clearer, then that fits exactly with our implementation plan. So that would align quite nicely, and then Section 9.3, as the committee has proposed, then follows on from that. So we are ready to implement it that way anyway. Quite frankly, the only reason why we didn't is because the last time we did legislative drafting, the internet wasn't part of that. So we've just discovered now that one can actually prescribe that the internet is made publicly available.
Okay.
State law advisors can assist with that.
So are we happy with that presentation?
Yes.
Can we then adopt the legislation with this kind of amendment? The amendment will say the minister must post a complete list of all persons on the register to be published on the website of the Department of Foreign Affairs and updated as frequently as possible and made publicly available.
Yeah. Or whenever it's applicable.
Can you agree on that amendment?
Yes.
Can you therefore agree that once that phrasing has been done, that we just see that particular phrasing as we've said it, not to be meaning something else that we did not say. If that is the case, can we then adopt the the report that we have considered the bill and we have adopted it, amendments of the bill, and we have adopted it, and we can then submit our report to Parliament that we have done what we are required to do. And then, unless you want to say something.
I'm trying to understand from the minister of parliament whether I'm saying what she. I'm in the same boat.
She should read to us what we are saying.
What we are saying. Let me just go through is
what we are saying.
Yeah.
We have all the.
Let's not confuse us.
What we are saying. Paragraph 1, we say we don't have a problem with it. Paragraph 2, we are saying. Subsection 2, we are inserting the following. The minister must cause a complete list of all persons on the register to be published on the website of the Department of Foreign Affairs and updated. Sheila?
As frequently as may be necessary.
And made publicly
as necessary.
And we are saying that once we have done that, because we have now placed an obligation of that publication, of that compilation, of that updating, it therefore serves as your first step to verify whoever. And then, should there be questions arising, Section 363, where the department director general will have to issue a certificate that will then serve as a prima facie evidence, whether in court or wherever. But that certificate will serve as a prima facie evidence. And then if the individual is not then satisfied with that, he can then test that evidence in court. But the court will then be able to deal with the certificate. Dina, I just want to check whether are we on the same
footing.
Is it what you're saying? Okay. So it's what we have adopted, members.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, there's another observation. We don't have these things in Annex. We have rally voices, so you just stand there and say, "Amen," and everybody can hear you. Honourable members, we want to thank you for having done that. The NEWA insists that I must read the report as written. Report of the Portfolio Committee of Foreign Affairs on the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Amendment Bill. National Assembly, Section 75, dated 30 July 2008. The Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs, having considered the subject of the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Amendment Bill, referred to it and classified by the Joint Checking Mechanism as Section 75 Bill, reports to the House the following amendments. That we have done what the National Assembly has done, and we sign it and we send it to the Speaker, and we can earn our salary. Mm-hmm. Then no one will say that we are in a gravy train. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of the top management of the Department of Foreign Affairs to thank you very much for affording us the opportunity to present this amendment, and also for the committee to consider the amendment with amendments.
Thank you very much to everybody. I'm told that the NEWA, in celebrating the fact that we've done this bill so quickly, she has provided lunch. And I must indicate to you that the reason why this bill was expedited, it needs to fit into the August parliamentary session of all the bills that must go before Parliament in August. And when we look at the report, the technical bill does not require much. And that's why I wanted to get to finish. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Well,